I was born in the J.E.B. Stewart Hospital in Richmond, Virginia in 1931.
That's about a year too.
My father was a sports editor of the, I can't remember whether it was the Newsleader or the Times Dispatch, but it was the paper that Douglas Southall Freeman was chief editor and publisher of. And in 1930, this was, of course, the depths of the Depression, and everyone was sort of struggling to survive. Freeman was a very penurious person, and my father had an awful time trying to get raises. So in 1935, the Washington Post asked him to go to Washington and be sports editor. They demoted a rather well-known sports columnist named Shirley Povich to make room for my father, and he would have been about 33 or 34 years old, so he's a relatively young man to get that job. He lasted about a year, and then the publisher, Eugene Meyer, who was a wealthy person who knew nothing about journalism but sort of the Murdoch of his day, brought in an efficiency expert, so-called, who also knew nothing about journalism, who decided that he was going to take over all the hiring and firing and give instructions to the editors. And the managing editor immediately resigned in protest. About 9 or 10 of the other editors, including my father, also resigned. Now this, again, was in the depths of the Depression. They all got good jobs, my father went to the Washington Star as city editor, and where he, among other things, he was among the reporters who used to stand around Franklin Roosevelt's desk and interview him. The press conferences were in the Oval Office back then. Meanwhile, I was sort of growing up in Falls Church, Virginia, and we lived next door to Milton Eisenhower, who was Dwight Eisenhower's brother, and I remember trying to pull the ribbons off his Ike's tunic when he was home. He came home from the Philippines and stayed there for a while. And then in 1941, Marshall Field, who had a newspaper in New York City, and of course the big Field store in Chicago, decided to establish a newspaper in Chicago and sent out word all over the country for newspaper people to come up there and help him start it. And one of the people he contacted was my father, who went up there as news editor of the Chicago Sun. Within a week of the paper starting to publish, Pearl Harbor took place. And at the time, I was on a farm in central Michigan with my younger brother, because my mother had congenital heart trouble and could not take care of us. So we spent a year on a farm walking a mile down the road to a one-room school where I was the whole fifth grade. And that's where I learned to take a bath in the kitchen and use the privy and everything. And things stabilized a little bit, and my family got a home in Winnetka, which is just north of Chicago. And we were reunited, and we lived there about 8 years, I went to school in Winnetka, which had the progressive, is the place where the progressive school system, learning by doing, John Dewey's idea, that's where they started that. So the schools were very advanced, and I went to school with people like Don Rumsfeld and all these strange rich kids, and of course we weren't wealthy. And I got a scholarship, athletic scholarship, to go to a private school for three years to the local country day school. And then my mother had a bad spell and was told by her doctor that she better get in a warm climate or she was going to die. And so they moved to Texas, and I did my senior year at Beaumont High School in Texas, where I studied not at all because the schools in Winnetka were so great that there wasn't anything really to do except just wait for a chance to graduate and go to college. My mother died the first year that I was in the local community college, and my father decided to go back to Washington. And I was editor of the newspaper there at the college, and he wanted to point me toward journalism. He worked as the head of the PR department of the Salary Stabilization Board for a year, and then took over the office of a young congressman who was just elected from Texas named Jack Brooks, and became his administrative assistant to sort of introduce him to Washington. Brooks was 29 years old. He was the youngest member of Congress, and he served over 40 years in Congress. And I still occasionally hear from him today. He ended his career as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and he was on the committee that voted for impeachment of Richard Nixon. He was a second-ranking member at that time. There are a lot of stories that go with that, but that'll have to wait. I went to George Washington University, played baseball for a year, and blew out my arm, and that ended my baseball career, and majored in history. And the chairman of the history department put me in touch with a historian at Emory University, whom he knew, named Bill Wiley. And I talked with Wiley, and he offered me an assistantship, just apparently on the recommendation of the history department chairman. But the draft was breathing on everybody's neck, and when I turned 18, the only way I could stay out of Korea was to keep my grades in the top 10%, which at GW was not too difficult. But then when I applied to graduate school, I applied to three graduate schools, Emory because of Wiley, Harvard, and Chicago, and got graduate fellowships at all three places. But I started thinking, no way I'm going to be in the top 10% in those graduate programs. So I went down and enlisted in the Navy and went to officer's candidate school and was commissioned and sent up to Newfoundland for about 8 months. And then suddenly got a message, report in 10 days to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon. And I caught a flight down to New York, where the admiral in charge of our office had his headquarters, and tried to get him to veto the orders, because I liked it in Newfoundland. I didn't want to go to the Pentagon. And he was kind of amused at this brazenness by this young ensign, you know, trying to talk to an admiral, get orders canceled. He said, "This is from Admiral Radford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You know, there's no way I can do anything about this. You just better pack up and get down there." So I did, and I spent 2.5 years on the staff of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff as an intelligence officer. And eventually a book grew out of that experience, because one of the activities that we were involved in was writing what they called background bearing on the problem. Whenever they had a flap, as they called it, and we had a bunch of them then. The first one was the Indochina crisis, when the French pulled out and the Americans, after Dien Bien Phu, the Americans went in. Our role was background bearing on the problem, which meant researching what had happened in Vietnam before we got in. And most of the sources for that I could get hold of were in French. There was one book in English by a woman named Ellen Hammer, I think. And everything else was in French, except some of the military stuff that came from the OSS during World War II. They had some records that we used. And I was the only one in the office who could read French, because I had taken 1 year at GW. With the help of a dictionary and a book of idioms, I was able to do it all right. So worked on that, and then the next year, we were working on the Formosa Straits crisis, and the following year, the Suez crisis. And the book that came out was essentially what we did on Vietnam, declassified about 1980, and then published by Prager, which is a military publisher. And after I'd served my 4 years, I got a call from Wiley saying, "We're still holding your fellowship." And so I went to Emory and was there through the master's program and through the doctoral program, all except the dissertation. Then I went to the University of Southwest Louisiana, taught for a year, and met my current wife, wife of, 48 years, I guess, now.